morning. Good morning, honorable members. Sorry for the delayed connection. Let me actually get the roll call then, Secretariat.
Chair, Mrs. Hemmings, Chair.
Honorable Hemmings.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, everyone on the platform.
Morning and welcome.
Mr. Benz Ngamashi, Chair.
Honorable Benz Ngamashi.
Mono Salo, Namalungu.
Wamkelekile, Tata. Morning.
Chair, Mr. Mbuyani, Chair.
Honorable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, good morning. Good morning to the colleague and present.
Good morning, Mbuyani.
Chair, Mr. Thring, Chair.
Honorable Thring.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues.
Welcome, Honorable Thring.
Chair, Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Honorable Mulder. Welcome and more.
Ms. Mutahum, Chair.
Honorable Mutahum.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone. I'm present.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Those are all the members currently on the platform. We correct. We can proceed with the meeting, Chair.
I'm sure we can be able to actually check on the agenda. Can we find the program or the agenda?
We can, Chair.
Okay. I'm not so sure if I see it from here. Are you winning, Secretary?
Chair, the agenda is right to check. Mrs. Hemmings raised the hand. We are considering. I don't know if you can see, Chair. Can you see? You can't.
No, I can't see it.
Okay.
At all. Just read it through quickly. That's fine.
We have apologies, Chair. I'll put first item. I've received two apologies today. To now, Chair, is Ms. Famous Yaku, who's not able to attend because of party business, and Ms. Mwasi, who has a medical apology, Chair. Other two members may join us during the course of this morning. Then, Chair, on the agenda is a briefing by the National Gambling Board on its fourth quarter financial and non-financial performance for the 2020-21 financial year, consideration of minutes, and consideration of the amended committee program. That's the agenda, Chair. Ms. Hemmings raised her hand.
Honorable Hemmings.
Good morning, Chair. I wish to propose adoption of the agenda as tabled.
Thank you. Can we actually get a second? I see Honorable Benz Ngamashi.
Correct, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I second the adoption of the agenda. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much. Are there any objections? In the absence, Honorable Members, can we then proceed? We've got the apologies noted, Secretariat. I'm sure we can actually then be able to proceed to the National Gambling Board. Obviously, I'm sure there will be actually a representation from the delegation. And then we can actually, maybe there's the introduction. Yes.
Ms. Caroline Kongwa is the lead administrator. She will do the presentation and she may well introduce the team from National Gambling Board as well as TTIC. I'm not sure if the COO would like to do, Ms. Matumela would like to do some introductory remarks, or will it be led by Ms. Caroline Congress Chair?
Yeah, we will actually obviously invite our COO, and we will actually welcome as well Ms. Caroline Kongwa. COO, let's actually welcome you from the DTIC side, and I'm sure we will be able to get Ms. Kongwa bringing in the rest of the team, and we'll actually go through the presentation, which is circulated to everyone. Good morning, COO.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member. I'm struggling with my video here. We have Caroline Kongwa, a chairperson who is the administrator for the National Gambling Board. She'll be leading the presentation this morning on the fourth quarter performance of the NGB, and Caroline will introduce the team to you. Thank you.
Chair, may I ask before we proceed, Chair, just a procedural matter that we need to address, Chair?
Okay. Room Secretary.
There's a matter that of the decision that you've taken last week regarding the postponement of meetings, Chair.
And okay.
That matter needs to be brought to the committee's attention because it happened outside of the committee, and as terms of the rules, you need to inform the committee of your decision so that we can be in compliance with the rules, Chair.
Yes. So I'm sure you can actually speak just quickly through that procedurally. Yes.
I'll speak to that, Chair. In terms of Rule 158, Chairperson has the right to make decisions on behalf of the committee when there is a challenge, when the committee is not able to meet. And last week, the committee received a letter from the Minister of Trade and Industry, Mr. E. Patel, requesting additional time for the committee, for the DTIC to consider the submissions received during the public hearings in the Copyright Amendment Bill, as well as the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. Now, as a result of that request, the Chairperson took a decision to postpone deliberations for the 31st of August, as well as request the House Chairperson to change the agenda item for the 1st of September, which would have been deliberations on the Copyright and Performance Protection Amendment Bill. In light of that decision, the Chairperson is required in terms of Rule 158.2c to report his decision to the committee, which I'm technically doing. So that is required in terms of the rules. Any decision taken by the Chairperson must be reported to the committee at its first meeting, and which is today.
Thank you very much, Secretariat. Maybe I should actually also make an addition with that kind of request. I did actually speak to parties, explained that there is actually the request, and also indicated that that will impact on our program. In terms of the adopted program, there is actually the agenda for today's minutes, issues of minutes, and the issue of the program as adopted by the committee. So I think one would actually then just make sure that at least it's clarified. I see Honorable Hammonds raising a hand. Honorable Hammonds.
Thank you, Chair. I rise to support your proposal to change the program of the Portfolio Committee to accommodate the correspondence that you've received from the Minister. We have all been present in our oral presentations on the remitted bills, and we note the complexity of the submissions made and the fact that many of them even went beyond the six reservations of the President. So we rise to support the amendment of the committee program to accommodate the Minister. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Hammonds. That's why then in terms of the agenda, we have accommodated those issues. But thanks for your confirmation of our procedure to move forward. Secretary, I'm sure that covers the procedural issues. We can then be able to move to the National Gambling Board. COO, apology for interrupting you. And let's actually get you to introduce the Gambling Board team and be able to take us through the presentation. COO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Caroline, Ms. Caroline Gongwa, Chair, who is the administrator for the National Gambling Board, will lead us with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Nondombi Madomela, our COO. let's actually then invite the National Gambling Board team, Ms. Caroline Kongwa. You're welcome. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, honourable members and members of the public who've joined. As Nontombi has indicated, I'm Caroline Kongwa, the administrator for the National Gambling Board. I'm joined here by my colleague, Kaveshka Makadas, who's our chief financial officer, and Yvonne Gwenwure, who's the economic researcher. Thank you.
I'm sure you can proceed with the presentation. Thank you.
I'll just be sharing my presentation. We've been invited to present our fourth quarter performance report for the financial year ending 31 March 2021. Just to start, the National Gambling Board is mandated by the National Gambling Act, 7 of 2004. We have various mandates which are set out in the Act, having been established as a Schedule 3 entity. We oversee compliance of provinces in the manner in which they license gambling licensees. So the provinces are referred to as either provincial gambling boards or provincial licensing authorities. We're also entrusted to ensure that we have a system to detect unlawful or unlicensed gambling activities. Then we also have the mandate to monitor market share and market conduct, and this is basically the market behavior of those who are licensed and also in terms of gross gambling revenue that they generate. We also are mandated to ensure that we monitor socioeconomic patterns of gambling activities, and this we do through research. We also ensure that we identify socioeconomic impact of gambling and addictive or compulsive gambling, which is more the negative impact that may flow from gambling. And then we're also entrusted to establish a national register, which we have. There we ensure that we register every gambling machine and gambling device, and we also house the National Central Electronic Monitoring System, which basically is utilized to monitor specifically the limited payout machine industry. Then we have to ensure that we investigate matters related to unlawful winnings. Unlawful winnings basically would be an individual illegally gambling and then those winnings are being confiscated by either banks or regulators, and then that money is transferred to the National Gambling Board. The National Gambling Board has to apply to the High Court to forfeit the money to the state. And then the last one, we are mandated to advise the National Gambling Policy Council, which our Minister, Trade, Industry and Competition is the chairperson of, and the Policy Council comprises all provincial MECs. And then our mandate is also informed by the National Gambling Policy of 2016. So that's briefly basically our mandate and what informs what we do. Overall, our performance, and just to give you a snapshot, we have achieved our sixth consecutive clean audit, and this accounts for basically 7 years under administration. We have been able to, the year ending March 2021, we spent 92% of our budget, whilst we generated a surplus of $1.3 million. And then we didn't have any or report any fruitless and wasteful expenditure or irregular expenditure. We ensured that our internal controls continue to operate effectively. PFMA requirements such as honoring creditors' payments within 30 days were able to achieve. And then our financial position reflects a positive balance of $49.9 million. This includes definitely surpluses that have accrued over the years and further increased revenue that we have been able to derive from the National Central Electronic Monitoring System, which we basically impose a monitoring fee on the limited payout machine industry. This amount also includes 5.6 million, which is part of the unlawful winnings we confiscate. This amount again increases each year as we continue to confiscate. At the same time, we reduce the balance as we apply to court to have these matters forfeited if after an investigation we resolve that indeed a person gambles illegally. If not, then we refund monies due to the particular individual. So to give you a summary also on our plan targets that were for Q4, we had 10 planned targets. Basically, the output indicators, as you'll see, they were able to achieve all of them. And then to also give you just a snapshot into the bulk of the output indicators that we had planned to do as set out in our annual performance plan. On market share and market conduct, basically, we observed certain trends and definitely the outcome thereof influenced by the effects of the COVID pandemic. So we decided to give you a comparison to report basically from a sector performance perspective what is weighted in the gambling industry definitely dropped by 120 billion and this was definitely an effect of COVID-19. When we compare to the 2020 financial year average, quarter three, money weighted had been 340 billion. However, last financial year, as of quarter three, they was basically 220 billion, but it's understandable considering the lockdown regulations. And then gross gambling revenue has also taken a dip, and this has translated to a loss of 200 million. Yet again, it's an effect of the COVID pandemic. When we compare again with the previous year, we had accumulated about 8.6 billion as the gambling industry. However, this year that dipped to 8.4 billion. And then definitely also tax and levies were also hit hardest. The past financial year, we saw basically a loss of 1 billion rand to the fiscus. And we yet again did the comparison with the previous year as of Q3. So this is our Q4 report. However, for specifically our sector performance statistics, we report a quarter behind. However, we have concluded our annual report, and as at the end of the financial year and at time of reporting, which was 31 July for our annual report, I'll show you the most recent figures, which do account for the whole financial year. But this slide is simply addressing what it is was targeted for reporting for quarter four. Moving forward, this is a snapshot yet again informed by the previous slide. A summary for all provinces and basically the GGR that has been collected now is specifically the most. So this picture is quite new in our observations and experience. Ordinarily, based on historic data, we would see that the casino industry would usually account for a bigger share of the gross gambling revenue. However, the betting sector actually has performed well and more than the casino and the LPM industry and the bingo industry. Yet again, it's informed by the restrictions, the lockdown restrictions. and the impact of the COVID pandemic. Why this is the case is the dip in revenue definitely was impacted by, or rather the modes of gambling who have a more destination approach where an individual has to approach a gambling establishment definitely were more restricted in their gambling activity, definitely based on their preference, as opposed to individuals who would rather place bets. So whilst betting establishments were also restricted, with the betting industry, individuals are able to place a bet, you know, online. It's not online gambling, but they can open an account and place a bet online. So from that perspective, their activity was able to proceed, as opposed to the other sectors where individuals would have to go into the establishment and, you know, play a gambling machine in order to wager or gamble. So that's why there is a change in which mode of gambling has actually generated more revenue. This is the same picture once again, however, it's from the provincial perspective. So as indicated earlier on, we are overseeing each provincial gambling board or provincial licensing authority and how it is they basically license. So we also do observations and present a perspective from a provincial perspective. Whilst Gauteng shares has decreased, however, it still accounted for a highest share, followed by KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape and the other provinces in Mpumalanga and Limpopo then follow and through to Free State, which would have generated, or rather Northern Cape and Free State, which would have generated the lowest gross gambling revenue. This slide basically is also informing performance of the industry year on year, but informed by the other slides also in a comparison of how we fared in the financial year 2020 as at Q3 and how we fared as at Q3 the financial year ending March 21. So that I've already spoken to, and we've definitely seen overall a decline as at quarter four of 2.5% in GGR. This slide is the one I was referring to, that is also reflected in our annual report. This is after all the statistics have been audited. The only mode of gambling that hasn't over the years reported a decline in revenue, as I've mentioned, is the betting sector, because they were not impacted to the extent other modes of gambling were impacted. So this just gives you a picture then year on year, and not per quarter, how the industry has performed. So we've seen an overall 28.7 decline in revenue between the financial year 2020 and the financial year ending 2021. Also, I was indicated there that the casino industry definitely reported the greatest decline at minus 50%. And then the next slide is also reporting on the National Central Electronic Monitoring System performance, because it's also one of our mandates in terms of Section 27. So for the financial year, we basically monitored 13,850 machines, and they derived 786 million in a million rand in GGR. Here we're also just reflecting how each province accounts for the number of machines and then the amount of revenue basically derived. So moving on then from our sector performance and national registers, we also conduct economic analysis and research into the impact of gambling. Why this is important is that in as much as we, you know, look at the economic benefits of regulation of this industry, at the same time, we try and monitor the negative impact, which I will go into in the following slide. So to start with here, for the past year, what we've been doing is considering, you know, how the industry is faring from a market structure perspective. Our detailed report definitely reported observations in terms of oligopolies that are present in the gambling industry. It is one of our mandates to ensure that if we do observe as the National Gambling Board market behavior in, that may be uncompetitive, then we are at liberty to report that to the Competition Commission. So what we have been observing the gambling industry over time, and we've been analyzing from a sector performance perspective, and as I said, we found this dominance in form of oligopolistic market structure within the South African gambling industry. We also did research to look at other foreign jurisdictions and what happens. We definitely have seen a large casino operator, presence of casino operators in other sectors, and investment from that regard, such as the LPM and the bingo sector. From our perspective, we're definitely not saying anyone is abusing their dominance, but what we do have to monitor also is how then these investments would perhaps be barriers to entry, or whether you know, such investment or market behavior would hinder economic growth. Informed also by government's transformation agenda, one would ideally want to see the industry grow and new entrants to the market coming in, especially SMMEs, and being able to implement the principles as set out in the BBB Act, because that's also a piece of legislation that we would have to consider in the licensing process as set out in the BBB Act. So another mandate is definitely the advice to the National Gambling Policy Council, which we commonly refer to as the NGPC. We do have to continuously monitor uniformity of legislation. As the national regulator, we have to ensure that in as much as each province is licensing, you know, there is uniformity and harmony in the way that all the pieces of legislation are implemented, and also there's still compliance with the National Gambling Board. So a particular output we looked at was the issue of transformation. And again, in keeping with the transformation agenda, this was also informed by one of DTIC's outcomes. So when we analyzed the National Gambling Act, we looked at Section 53 because we're trying to resolve how it is we could, how it is actually issues of economic and social development could be considered. So the Act as it reads basically states that economic and social development matters can be considered under licensing conditions. However, you know, from the perspective of the competition issues, from the perspective of even, you know, SMMEs being able to enter the gambling market, what we are saying is perhaps there could be a consideration that it's more peremptory or mandatory, that HGIs are able to be licensed, as opposed to dealing with BBBE as a license condition. There should be that opportunity for them to be able to be licensed and manage the rollout of gambling activities in that regard. So this wasn't part of any legislative recommendation previously in versions of the bill. However, we're just noting from a research perspective to say because we view licensing as a tool for economic development, actually the act of licensing and the issuance of that license could foster black economic empowerment from the inception of the licensing process. So that was basically what it is we were considering. And then another important mandate of ours, as I referred to earlier, is ensuring that at all times we are able to balance the economic benefit versus the negative impact. So we don't directly provide a responsible gambling service, or rather counseling for compulsive and addictive gambling. And that is one way to counteract the negative impact of gambling, but that's at the tail end, after an individual has indicated that they are basically struggling or facing addiction. However, proactively what we try and do and is part of our mandate is to ensure that we conduct broad-based public education awareness programs. So prior to the lockdown period, we were always able to go on road shows with the DTIC, including our other DTIC entities. So we would partner with, for example, the National Credit Regulator, CIPC, National Liquor Authority, and would get together, led by the DTIC, and raise awareness on, the negative impact of, for example, gambling, liquor, and even just providing education on other services. So during the lockdown period, we have been limited, and we had to resort to multimedia publications. So we have chosen various themes. We've tried to participate in digitally or virtually online with different entities or organizations on promoting responsible gambling. We also held a capacity building workshop with the National Credit Regulator. And then we also made sure that we published gambling, or rather information, online. And there's an article then we did in collaboration with FIC. So every quarter we choose a theme, and this is basically the efforts that we made for public education and awareness. There's definitely more that can be done. If we were not faced with the pandemic and adhering basically to the restrictions. So the last aspect is basically our financial performance. As I said earlier, we reported a surplus, so this is basically the final view. We did envisage collection, a total revenue collection of 183 million. We basically spent 180 million, and this is includes our grant and revenue that we derive from the National Central Electronic Monitoring System. So yes, the COVID pandemic would have impacted our financial status, but the good thing is that as lockdown restrictions opened up, the industry recovered and we were able to collect our revenue. So this slide is basically dealing with the analysis there, therefore, in terms of from a revenue perspective and also expenditure perspective. This should bring me to the end of our quarter four presentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks very much for the presentation. I'm sure we can be able to actually be back to the committee to see if ever there are any questions, comments that we can take on basis of the presentation that you've given to us. Thank you very much. Honorable members, if we can actually just ask you to speak to the submission that we've just received from the National Gambling Board leadership. Honorable members?
Chair, we have Mr. Spring at the moment, Chair.
Honorable Spring?
Mr. Mbuyani, Chair.
And Honorable Mbuyani. Okay, wonderful. Honorable Three, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, no, mine is fairly simple. I think that the position of the ACDP with regards to gambling is very clear. We actually oppose gambling because of the social consequences that it actually has on our communities as well as on business. But having said that, Chair, I think that the responsibility of the National Gambling Board, they actually do have a social responsibility in terms of setting up more stringent, more robust deterrents and interventions for those who have become
honorable Spring.
And so I think very clearly what the ACDP would like to see communities, we understand that they are chair. It appears, am I clear now? I've just put my video off.
Okay, please. It's much better now, Honorable Green, it's much better now without
okay.
The video. Yes.
All right, thank you, Chair. So, Chair, as I was saying, the ACDP opposes all different forms of gambling. But having said that, we do think that the National Gambling Board has a responsibility to up its game in a sense to address the social ills that gambling causes, particularly with regards to your obsessive compulsive gamblers. And there are many, Chair, in our communities. These homes are being disrupted, broken because of these individuals who have this compulsion or addiction to gambling. And so certainly what we would like to see is a greater intention towards establishing these kinds of interventions to help these who have become addictive and are compulsive gamblers in our communities. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Ring. Honorable Mbuyane.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. Let me first welcome the presentation and also the status of the report in terms of the audit and the financial year. Chairperson, I'm not so sure whether my question would be based on the NGB or the department, because for the past few years now, where it's been an administrator in the field. But I just want to check, Chairperson, the process led to the development of a National Gambling Amendment Bill. Where is it now? Are we going to continue? Because the bill now is still before the NCOP, and seemingly we don't get enough votes from provinces to can pass or reject the bill. So I just want to check, how are we going to deal with the current misalignment of the provinces legislation and the national in terms of norms and standards? Because Chairperson, province may have been passing laws while the national MINMEC does not sit because they don't correlate. And as in terms of the amendment bill, we tried to correct the situation in terms of the correlatement and also the MINMEC being sitting. There are laws that are being passed at the provincial level. How far is the administrator been able to manage and monitor the provincial boards at that level of a province, Chairperson?
because we know there are illegal gambling that we spoke of from China and so forth. And in to my small understanding is that the all online gambling are illegal. And now, seemingly most of the gambling that are happening currently are online. So that means the National Gambling Board does not have sufficient teeth to deal with those illegal gamblings. I just want to check, because also the mandate of the NGB is to monitor activities at the provincial level. How far are they going to intervene in terms of legal gambling? Chairperson, maybe I'll pause there for now. Hence, I indicated earlier, my question is both the department and the NGB. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mbuyane. Secretariat?
Hey, Mr. Burns Namashi, Chair.
Honorable Burns Namashi.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope I'm audible enough. Chair, let me also align myself with the one time issue.
Honorable Ngomase?
Can you hear me, sir?
You're going softer right through. I'm not sure if ever the other members can hear you. You are very faint from my side.
Am I audible, sir?
Not very clear from my side. If ever you can just readjust as well.
Am I audible, sir?
Yeah, still very low. Secretariat, I'm not sure. Can you hear him, honorable members?
Can
you
hear that?
Come again. Hey, you are faint, honorable Namasha. You are very, very faint. Yes, I'm not sure what's happening. Maybe your guy's head is not connected, or maybe the positioning, I'm not sure. You're very, very faint, I can say. Okay, try again, Namashe. Ben Namashe, try again. Let's hear.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Is it better now?
Honorable members, I'm sure you can hear Honorable Hammond.
Yes, still very faint on my side, Chair.
Okay. Namashe, maybe Secretary, can you actually assist to actually see that you can assist the Honorable Benz Namashe? Namashe, you are very faint. We can't hear you. Let's hear. Are there any other members that wanted to make comments and ask questions, Honorable Secretary?
Chair, may I suggest that Mr. Namashe put his question on the chat, Chair, so then we can answer. Secretary, to read the chair, that would be the best option. But there's no other further hands, Chair.
Let me just say then, we did have received our research unit. They did actually have some issues relating to the National Gambling Board. They actually did selectively pick up issues for consideration, which are actually quite interesting, which I thought it's just few issues. I can actually read through that for the gambling board team. They actually did list the first one. They actually raised the point of what has been impact of reduced activity of the gambling industry on jobs in the industry since the start of the lockdown. So I think that's the question we should be able to ask coming out of the research unit, which I think is quite important to share. Let me actually also say the second question says there is an overspending of over 748,572,000 in administrative expenses. So maybe that will be the second question, but it's just more to a point of maybe understanding that overspending of 748,572. So 748,000. The third question is other income amounted to 137.3 million. So we're looking at the gambling board providing a breakdown of these sources of income besides interest and rental income. So the fourth question, it's actually in the quarterly reports mentioning the moratorium of filling of the CEO's position pending the establishment of the NGR for the gambling board. What other areas of the gambling board operations are affected by this? The fifth one was the gambling board conducted a capacity building workshop with the NCR with the fourth in the fourth quarter. How will that improve the functioning of the gambling board or the industry? Last but one, has there been an increase in online gambling activities during the lockdown, which is a separate question. The final question, what has been the impact of the lockdown on illegal gambling activity in the country? So there are those actually questions which I thought I should just share as well, coming from the analysis of our research unit. I hope maybe that they were able to actually go through okay, but we can actually raise some of those points if ever there are further issues for clarity. So can I check if ever there's still any further hands? If ever they are, let's take them. If not, can we go back to the gambling board team?
We have Mr. Cuthbert, and we will Mr. Burns from Lamassia again, Chair. You may be easy. Audio is
okay. Honourable Cuthbert, can we actually take your comments?
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and once again my apologies for arriving late to the meeting. I was on an important call. I just have one short question for the board, and that's just regarding monitoring compliance of all of these internet cafes. There's a number of internet cafes that's graded internet cafes, but they're actually what they call like pokey dens, where people, you know, participate in online gambling. And from our understanding, they aren't necessarily licensed and they don't necessarily fall within the legal prescripts. So I just wanted to find out, you know, what the board is doing to make sure that where these kinds of establishments are in place, that they are picked up and that obviously the relevant law enforcement is informed, because these establishments are actually highly illegal. So I just want a little bit of understanding as to what's being done to try and ensure that, you know, gambling that is taking place and, you know, that does contribute to economic revenue is done so in a legal manner.
Thank you very much, Honourable Cuthbert. Welcome. Your apology accepted. Let's actually pick up on Honourable Namashe Benz. Namashe, there was a connectivity problem. Let's hear if we can hear you. Honourable Benz, Namashe.
Am I audible now, Chair?
Much, much, much better. Welcome.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Mind, Chair, I think let me appreciate, as I said, the report. In line with the expression by Honorable Mbiani, and also raise some questions to the presentation. I did note, though, that there are awareness programs that they were conducting before the lockdown with other partners within the sector. However, Chair, with the consequences of people who actually get addicted to the practice, such that, you know, the disintegration of social institutions like your families and by extension, the community and so on. Now, I just want to check the...
Chair, we have another member's hand, Mr. McPherson, raised his hand, Chair.
I just want to check the extent to which there's an impactful program in terms of community awareness. And quite more specifically to say, for instance, as the gambling board,
Chairperson, Mr.
I would be interested to know if there are specific wards, especially in rural communities, in rural provinces, where they would say, we did conduct awareness programs in this particular village, at this particular ward, under this or within the area of jurisdiction of this particular traditional leader. I'm raising this, Chair, because more often meetings are held in halls or venues that are in urban areas or in towns where community members are expected to spend money for them to have access to information. Yet access to information is a constitutional right. I think Section 32 of the Constitution guarantees that the citizenry would have access to information, and the state, including its organs, will do everything necessary to ensure that citizens have access to information. Now, I just want to check the extent to which the gambling board has managed to enable communities to have as much information as is possible about the consequences of addiction within the gambling practice. If not, what are the plans, or are there any plans in place so as to mitigate those consequences? Thank you very much.
There was actually the McPherson. Welcome. Let me actually just say, you say you wanted to make a comment, ask questions. Welcome.
Thanks very much. Ms. Kongwa, you probably signed up for this job 6 years ago, I think it was, and thought you'd only be there for 6 months, but here we are, still with you. So my commiserations that you still are the administrator. I don't know if they're going to make you the administrator for life, but I think it's also really unacceptable that the gambling board has been allowed to exist in administration for 6 long years. Show me one other entity that has been subjected to the same kind of dereliction of executive duty as the gambling board has been. And that stems from the feeble and pathetic attempt by the DTI to introduce an amendment bill in the last parliament, which many of you luckily weren't a part of, but some of us, including myself, warned would only lead to the instability and the inability to actually constitute a proper board as we have now. And really, I hope that this committee will seize itself in doing what the DTI cannot do, and that is put together a functioning entity like the gambling board, and that the DTI stops playing games with this committee and the board with their ill-fated attempts to try and take away powers of provinces, which we warned them would kill the amendment bill in the NCOP, which for the very first time, and credit to the NCOP where it's due, exercised its constitutional right and kiboshed the bill in its place. First time it's ever done that. and the DTI still has a large amount of egg on its face. Be that as it may, Ms. Congwa, I want to understand where things are with the criminal charges that were apparently laid against the previous executives and the previous board for the wholesale theft and looting and corruption in the previous board before it was disbanded. The former minister, Rob Davies, refused to give us any update where it was. He refused to give us any names. And we still don't know who it was that was criminally charged and where those case numbers are and what progress has been made against that audit report. So can you please give me some indication where that is? The second thing I'd like to know, Ms. Congwa, is regarding the action of the board, or sorry, the administrators, to combat illegal online gambling. Can you tell me how much money has been confiscated, how many arrests have been made? Because I think that we both know that the answer is nil or very little. Because we still find ourselves in 2021 banning online gaming, which is just a crazy situation that continues to exist in this province, where profits are being made offshore, back of office is being, exists in other countries. We continue to lose out while South African punters play overseas. And it's now very clear that there is broad-ranging consensus, even amongst provinces, that online gambling should be made legal. So if you can just tell me how much money has been confiscated, how many arrests have been made, and how many successful prosecutions have been undertaken, I'd be very glad to know about that in terms of online illegal gambling. Online illegal gambling. Thanks so much.
Secretariat, maybe we can check if there are any further comments, questions.
No further hands, please.
Okay. Let me actually go back to DTIC and the board on the comments and questions. COO and the board team. Floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will start and I will hand over to Ms. Matomela to address other matters. I'll just start in the order that the questions came. And please forgive me if I don't sufficiently deal with some of the answers. We will provide answers through written reply because some of the answers to the questions asked, I would need to obtain further detail. In answering the questions also, I will be assisted by two of my colleagues who are part of the delegation. So I'll start with Honorable Singh's question. It was dealing with us adopting a more stringent and robust approach in addressing the social ills for compulsive and addictive gambling. With respect to that, we definitely agree. There's various models that we have looked into from a research perspective. So in other jurisdictions, the government actually takes on the responsibility to set up a responsible gambling program, provide treatment in that respect. In other jurisdictions, for example, Canada, we've seen that compulsive and addictive gambling is actually gotten to the extent where it's registered as or rather treated from a public health approach where it's registered as an illness. And then what we have basically in South Africa is the fact that we have an independent organization actually tackling this aspect. It is funded by 0.01% of GGR or gross gambling revenue from licensees, and it's one of the license conditions that they contribute to this to the non-profit organization, and the Provincial Gambling Board sits on the board of that organization, and every mode of gambling has a representative on that board, and they implement various programs and provide compulsive and addictive gambling. So just to answer, to say what more can we do, definitely there's more government can do. In one of the versions of the gambling bill, there was a provision that sought to try and ensure that we actually take on this responsibility. That way we definitely could do more. So we definitely agree there's more that can be done. It's very, very important to ensure that at all times we manage the balance between the revenue generation and the negative impact causing social ills in the society. If I may move on to Honorable Mwiana's questions. The first question was dealing with the alignment between national and provincial legislation. Definitely that can be done. A rationalization of laws project can be done. And that's, again, from a research perspective. So that definitely can be done, because we do agree, indeed, there's been various amendments to provincial legislation. On one of the slides where I spoke about uniformity of legislation, because it's one of our mandates to ensure that we continuously monitor and advise the National Gambling Policy Council, we do prepare various aspects. As I pointed out, say in quarter four, it was the aspect of how we can ensure that the legislation is actually aligned with the government's transformation agenda. So there are various aspects indeed where that alignment can be done. To start with, you know, the policy council is there to consider such proposals as they would, whether it be provincial legislation or national legislation, or even change, proposed change in gambling policy. So we definitely could do something for the NGB, and within our ability at this point in time, we could embark on such a project, which should then ultimately inform or be deliberated and considered, and should inform then how national and provincial legislation should be aligned. The next question was, how have we managed to monitor provincial gambling boards and illegal online gambling? What we have done within the limitations of our mandate in terms of national and provincial gambling legislation, the provincial gambling boards have the sole mandate to ensure that they tackle not only illegal gambling, illegal online gambling, but any form of illegal gambling. They are the licensing authorities, and they are mandated to ensure that happens. In our piece of legislation, we are empowered then to work with them. So what we have been doing is to ensure that we've established intergovernmental forums. It has gotten to the level where we have been able to, in the recent past, establish set up meetings and host meetings with the NAB joints. Our enforcement team has also been in touch with the commissioner's office, and a similar model at national level, the team had started working to ensure that at provincial level, with the SAPS provincial commissioners, such forums are put together. There was also working groups where there was consideration to ensure that even legislation is intentional on what a gambling offense is. So deliberations, and we were part of that, deliberations have gone to that extent. So currently in terms of prosecution, it would be the NPA. In terms of the actual arrest, it would be SAPS. And then we do, in terms of legislation, together with the provinces, have to then report to law enforcement these matters. So the details I don't have on me in terms of the actual arrest. Hopefully one of my colleagues, I don't know if they'll have that information readily available. Otherwise, we will have to address you specifically through written reply on that. But briefly, that's what we have been able to do. So we do monitor, the provinces do give us information on the progress and efforts they have made. When they also have awareness even on illegal gambling, the workshops are hosted in collaboration with the NGB. So we've done that with various provinces, for example, even the Northwest province, we've definitely done that. In terms of whether we have sufficient mandates to tackle illegal online gambling, it was one of the considerations in the gambling bill, where we were saying that to provide additional support from an enforcement perspective, then it was proposed that the National Gambling Board also has the same authority that the provincial gambling boards have. So it's unfortunate, yes, the bill did not go through, but that was a proposal, so that we do not just sit with a monitoring mandate and collaborative, but we can actually be direct and intentional and take charge in some of these matters. Then there was another question as to how far we will intervene with illegal gambling. It has really been more indirect, and as I indicated, if we had a specific mandate, as the provinces do, more could be done. Definitely we would have to capacitate the entity in that respect. However, they are, we can provide written detail on the extent to which we are involved, and we can confirm we definitely are involved. I will move on to Honorable Casted's question, which was dealing with monitoring compliance of the internet cafes and what has been done. So over the years, yes, we have been monitoring. We did that. We even made efforts to have meetings with the film publication board, who register internet cafes, because through the interactions with law enforcement, it was discovered to say, in as much as they present themselves as internet cafes, and we discovered some of them are not necessarily internet cafes. Provincial gambling boards have also shared with us such intel. The challenge has been, and this is from past reports, where the server itself is not necessarily at the establishment. Law enforcement may come, and all they find are computer screens. They're not able to get a hold of evidence itself because the server is seated elsewhere. We've also had discussions with Department of Communications in how even and then also suggested you know, whether safety and security should come in terms of monitoring of internet traffic into the Republic, because the ZA registry actually informed us of how, you know, they are possibilities, but again, it would have to be informed by legislation. So the issue of illegal online gambling, because it goes to that extent, we were informed, dealing with internet traffic, it brings about a safety and security concern if we are to be empowered to monitor internet traffic related to illegal online gambling. It is an issue and a decision that also involves the Department of Communications and safety and security at the time. This is something we did table to our minister for the DTIC to consider. So there's ways in which, yes, jurisdictions actually deal with this. Those are the attempts we've made. I think it overlaps, yes, in a way with what Honorable Mbuyane has asked of us. And yet again, we have made efforts, and we can give details through written reply. Honorable Kamashe also asked what is the extent of the impact, what is the extent of impact, yes, we've made with education and awareness, and are we able to, you know, provide specific information in terms of what and traditional leaders we have worked with. We haven't worked with traditional leaders. It hasn't been in the past a particular focus. What we did, what we can give you information on is the specific areas where we did go and conduct the roadshows with the DTIC. And what we're saying here is we definitely would have to go back to the drawing board and be specific and intentional to be more impactful. So we definitely note that, and it has to be something that we proceed to work on. And then dealing with Honorable McPherson's questions on dating back, I think, to 2014, the criminal charges that may have been laid, I would have to reply via written reply. We did lay charges against a former official of the National Gambling Board, and then I would definitely have to come back with details via written reply, because we have to check basically where those matters were. We had certain documents, yes, destroyed, and certain equipment missing at the time. So we will revert back with via written reply, so that we do not give inaccurate information due to the sensitivity of these matters. I would like to hand over to Yvonne Gwenwore just to deal with the impact of jobs, who is our economic researcher, in tackling the response from the content and content advisors, then the CFO will deal with the questions on financing. I will have to leave. I can deal with the moratorium of filling in of the CEO position and if any areas are affected. So just to rehash, in 2014, and the DTA could supplement where necessary, I was appointed as administrator pending the establishment of the National Gambling Regulator. So that is the position that stands, and definitely if there is a change in perspective and a change in decision, we will definitely, as a National Gambling Board, have to be guided by Minister in that regard. So we have not been impacted as an entity with the current governance arrangements in place. We've been able to function over 7 years. I think it's actually 7 years today. We've been under administration. The bill, the gambling bill, did come into the process with the proposed governance structure, but as has been mentioned, it's at the NCOP. It was touching on the governance structure. So we have not been affected because the authority vested with myself has been that of ensuring that the gambling board is functional, and we've been able to function within the limits of our legislation. And then the capacity building workshop with the NCR, the details I'll have to revert back through written reply, but what basically informed this was, you know, through research that had been done, we picked up the fact that, for example, in the Eastern Cape, there was research done where, you know, individuals would perhaps borrow money or even use social grants, various sources of money to try and gamble. So hence we got together with the NCR because we suggested to them to say, in clips we have seen where people share gambling experiences, some people have borrowed and they deal with debt management. So we felt it was a prudent collaboration to get together with them as a fellow DTIC entity and have this workshop. So we then went ahead and did that as an intervention. We can give further details. And then whether there's been an increase of online gambling and what the impact of online gambling has been, if you may allow us, we would want to revert back through written reply on that. So for now, may I hand over to Yvonne and then followed by Kaveshka. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
We will then continue to have the whole team responding, including the DTIC, the department, and then we will follow up again with members if ever there are any further clarity they need. Thank you very much, Accounting Authority. I'm sure the colleagues, they will follow as you invited them.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. I'm just going to touch on the question on what the impact has been as a resultant of the reduced activity on jobs within the gambling industry. Certainly, the gambling industry as a leisure industry was certainly impacted by the COVID pandemic due to the lockdowns, and even when the industry was permitted to open, various factors that were in play to try to mitigate the spread of the virus, such as curfew times, limits on the numbers of people, social gatherings, including within the gambling establishments themselves, as well as the ban on the sale of alcohol, all had an impact on the operability of the industry and certainly on jobs. So with regards to employment stats themselves, we normally collect them at the end of every financial year. So at the time of reporting for NGB's Q4 performance, we hadn't collected the statistics. However, we have collected them, and there was certainly a decline in employment between the pre-COVID financial year and certainly the end of the last financial year as at 31st of March. Particularly the casino industry is the one that we saw quite a number of jobs, just over 4,000 of them shed in the last financial year. Thank you. I'll leave my colleague Kavishka to answer the finance questions.
Thank you, Yvonne. Good morning, honorable members. I'm going to set up to respond to the two questions that were raised in terms of financial performance. The first one related to overexpenditure of 748,000 rand under administrative expenditure. This relates to lease expenditure, and it's purely done in terms of our GRAP standards. There are no monetary or actual rand value spent. There isn't an actual expenditure that has taken place, purely an accounting entry. It's done in terms of our GRAP standards, and we refer to it as straight lining of your lease expenditure over your lease period. What happens here, and if I can just explain the principle behind the straight lining of the lease, is that your lease varies, your actual lease payments would vary over your lease term. The NGB has a 10-year lease, and in relation to the 2020-21 financial year, we were in year 8 of that lease. So the standards within require you to straight line or get an indication of what your lease would be, your lease cost would be over that 10-year period. So you take your actual lease value and you then, the total cost of your lease divided by 10 years, if I could simplify to that extent. And you would then take that value, which would be regarded as your annual lease cost, and you would then compare to what you actually spent during the financial year. So our actual cost less what the average cost over your 10 years would be gave rise to that difference. Now, in terms of the principle, again, if you then look at your full lease term, you normally expect you would have under expenditure during your first few years of the lease, and during the end of the lease, you ordinarily have over expenditure. And it's purely based on the fact that over your lease term, you'd have escalations. And it's normally that the escalations are more significant towards the end of your lease term, or your lease term, sorry. So the result of this would basically be a journal entry that we process, and it amounted to that 748,000 rand. In terms of the other income and the variance that was there for 14 million, and I think it comes out as under collection of 14 million rand worth of other income, we receive LPM revenue. And LPM revenue as at the point of recording in our report for March would have only been finalized in the months of April and May. So in terms of actual revenue collection, when we finalized our annual financial statements, that variance that was reflected there of 14 million rand significantly reduced. and our LPM revenue at the end of the 31st of March and at the point of submission of our financial statements was 146 million rand in comparison to the 131 million rand that we're looking at. This would have meant that there was only 2 million rand that we would have under-collected by, and this is purely based on the fact that our budget is an estimation and it's dependent on the performance of the LPM industry. Thank you.
Chairperson? My colleague, Ms. Awini Lesnova, would just like to expand on the intergovernmental forums and efforts we have made in tackling illegal online gambling. She's the Senior Inspector for Enforcement. So if you may, she would just like to expand
go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Bawinile Ngobo, the Senior Inspector for the Enforcement. So basically on the first question with regards to what has been done with regards to our interventions in terms of illegal gambling within the country, what we have noticed was that illegal gambling was reported at many police stations, but the challenge was the understanding of the illegal gambling itself or the legal and illegal gambling environment itself. It was a challenge for many, including law enforcement agencies. So from this observation, we then approached the NetJoins structure to request their consideration for a priority committee to be set or to address illegal gambling. From 2018, we had that structure running. It's called Stakeholders Priority Committee to Address Illegal Gambling. It is co-chaired by the NGB. It's chaired by SAPS and co-chaired by NGB. The structure is now formally operational. It had led to the establishment of provincial structures. In each structure, we have various enforcement agencies whose operations are critical in addressing illegal gambling. As I've alluded earlier, illegal gambling space is not a common one. It's rather complex for many. So in the structure, we have NPA, the National Prosecuting Authority, represented. We have SAPS, various divisions within the SAPS, including your visible policing, your detectives, as well as the Hawks, the DPCI, various investigations units within the DPCI. So from the cases that we have been receiving or reporting to the SAPS, we've noted that many have been investigated, but when it gets to court, there are challenges with regards to technicalities. We've then, as a national structure, assisting the provincial structures, we then made or developed what we call standard operating procedures to assist with investigating various forms of illegal gambling. With regards to internet cafes, there's been quite a number of successes, cases that has been to court and convicted. However, there has been a large number which also has been withdrawn due to challenges. We've then identified a team that will be conducting workshops in provinces for various investigations personnel to undertake that training so that they are able to assist with regards to investigating, in particular, internet cafes. You will note that in the investigation or during raids, I must say, it is easy to just put off the server and all the evidence is gone. So it then becomes impossible for the investigator to be able to prove the crime case, which is the reason why we then set up that standard operating procedure, which will involve the whole process of investigation. So we are working together with the provinces to try and assist with regards to investigating and successfully achieving convictions with regards to unlawful or illegal gambling taking place within the country. We've had also quite a number of reports of the asset forfeiture investigations within the SAPS, where they have received court orders to forfeit the assets that are being used within the illegal gambling environment. So on the information, the accurate information, we'll have to add on in the written reply, as our accounting authority has mentioned earlier, the actual statistics of what has been done. But with regards to the enforcement, there are systems in place. We are confident that with the active execution of the structures within the provinces, we will be able to successfully win the battle on illegal gambling. Thank you.
Okay, we can just then check from the DTI, see if Trevor has any comments, and then we'll go back to the honorable members to check if ever there are other issues they would like to raise. Let's get the DTIC.
Thank you, honorable Chairperson. Caroline has responded to the question around the CEO, and I do concur, Chair, that indeed the decision was taken was to push the filling of the position of the CEO in abeyance pending the establishment of the gambling of the National Gambling Regulator as proposed in the Gambling Amendment Bill. And then with regards to the entity being under administration, Chair, yes, we agree the entity has been under administration since 2014. I can assure the committee that it was never the intention of the department to have the entity under administration for that long. But having considered the options available, it was decided that it was best to allow the amendment bill process to unfold and conclude first. And so the delays in that process have unfortunately impacted on the situation we have in the future. So I'm not sure if Caroline was indicated. I'm not aware of any decision that has been taken contrary to that. And so the position of the state was that we are waiting for the process to unfold and conclude before we do anything with the entity. Thank you, Chair.
And let's then actually, honorable members, come back to check if there are any further questions. But let me just say there is actually the confirmation that we would actually be able to receive some of the questions that were raised and comments or information in terms of detail that will be actually submitted in writing back to the committee. Can I ask if there are any further comments, questions from members?
Chair, Mr. McPherson, what is your thing, Chair?
Honorable McPherson?
Yes, thanks so much, Chair. Ms. Conqua, I'm somewhat disappointed, if I may say, that the information around prosecutions, around anything to do with online gaming, will have to be done in writing. And, I mean, I would have expected you, to be perfectly honest, to come prepared with that information. I mean, there's never a time that this committee has never not wanted to interrogate and drill down into illegal online gaming. And to be frank, you should have at your fingertips how many people have been prosecuted successfully, how much money has been confiscated, and so on. Because if you'll recall, yourself and the DTI once famously said that you would never have to or need to license online gambling because you have extraordinary monitoring tools at your fingertips and were able to deal with it as and when it happened. Now, if that's the case, I mean, surely that information should be known. It should also be able to be known that an investigation, a criminal charge that was laid 6-7 years ago that gutted the NGB should also be at your fingertips on the progress of that. So, you know, I'm somewhat disappointed that, I could have submitted these questions in writing and I would have got the responses in writing. I mean, that's what this has been reduced to. So this is an oversight committee. They're supposed to be holding those entities that fall under accountable, and those entities should have the information available. As long as I've known you, Ms. Conqua, I've asked these same repeat questions, and hopefully one day I'm going to get, you know, the right answers. But I'm really, really disappointed that you don't have any of this information at your fingertips. And what it says to me is that, and in fact, actually, the NGB has no capacity whatsoever to stop illegal gambling, because if it did, it would have that information at hand and proudly be able to say, we've confiscated 100 million rand, 50 people are in jail, and these are the prosecutions that are lined up. And but that's, you and I both know that that's not the case. So I'm really concerned about that. And I really want to take issue about, you know, the NGB's belief that it leads to centralized enforcement. And it still hasn't dawned on the NGB that is never going to pass through the NCOB, because provinces are never ever going to give up their exclusive rights regarding gambling in their provinces, which includes licensing, enforcement, taxation. And I'm surprised that is still a belief of the NGB that needs to be the way forward. What the NGB should actually be doing, it should not be what you want it to be, some sort of long arm of the law. What it should be doing is a entity that is drawing up progressive policies around gambling, an entity that is looking to create frameworks and certainty for investment, and an entity that is looking to protect consumers through respectable legislation and regulation, and that's just quite frankly not happening. So I think that the NGB's mandate and view continues to be misguided. So, you know, it's a tragedy that, you know, we've spent our morning only to be told that the most of our questions will be responded to in writing, Chair. The next time the NGB want to come to this committee, just let me know. I'll send you a list of the questions and they can give me the answers in writing, because that's actually what this meeting's been reduced to. Thanks.
Honorable Mbuyane, I see your hand.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson, once more. Chairperson, I think I'll welcome the proposal that some of the question made will be submitted through a writing response. Because, Chairperson, this is very much important. I also think the department is part of this one, because the 6-7 years being having an administrator in this a very much important entity, it's to us it's not properly Chair. What you can say, Chair, I don't think it also been a process of for being misaligned in the terms of the legislation.
What is it that we can do in the process of still waiting for the bill before the NCOP? Because the enforcement in the gambling legislation is not properly there, because to prevent the abusive practice, the example, as I said, by the bookmakers taking advantage of the national lottery. We know that the national lottery is only playing on Wednesday and Saturday. But now there's lottery every day. So those issues, I think it's a problem. Chairperson, and also the question of for awareness. Because we know that the only three provinces around the country that are urban in nature. But most people and most provinces are rural. And if the department as of now, they have not engaged traditional leaders, because that means the entire society of South Africa is not aware of this process of gambling and their challenges around gambling. So I'll urge the entity to go through those processes and engage the rural provinces in terms of the awareness and what is it that is there in terms of the allocation to non-profit organization in dealing with the scourge of the awareness that is causing social ills in our society, Chairperson. Hence, I'm saying no, I'll wait for the written response from the department. Thank you very much, Chair.
Secretariat, can I just check if ever there's any further members wanting to comment, follow-up questions?
No hands, Chair.
Okay. Let me just say, go back to Ms. Caroline Kongwa. You say that fingertips, yes, might be actually quite important, but coming to the committee, it's actually going to be quite helpful that you are sure and you have verified the detail and information, because it will be difficult for us as the portfolio committee to have the changes. If ever maybe you say there are three things we have to consider, but when you actually come back, you say no, it was actually four, not three. So I think we do accept that you should actually give us the accurate information in writing, so that at least we actually know the proper detail of what we have asked you to provide detail on. And I think let's actually then try and conclude, because I think there are no follow-up questions, but we actually note the concerns of the members. Let's actually then check if ever there's any final conclusion by the department, but firstly by the board, and then be able to actually then get to the department as well. And I think we do actually look forward to written submissions of the questions that you are not able to give us the detail in terms of our discussion in today's meeting. Can I actually go back to the DDIC, firstly to the board to conclude, and then go to the DDIC so that at least we move to the next item. Can I give you actually COO? Let's get the COO first then, and then we'll go back to Ms. Kongwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. From the department side, Chairperson, the comments are noted. We will reverse inviting you to the issue of the entity in the administration.
Okay. Let's go back to the board, Ms. Kongwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also thank you to the honorable members who have provided comments and guidance. We do note the guidance and advice regarding the education and awareness, and basically, you know, the need to ensure that we adopt a more impactful approach
and be intentional with specific interventions on education and awareness in tackling social ills that are infesting the communities. We definitely appreciate that advice. We also appreciate the comments on enforcement, and we will definitely go back to the drawing board and ensure that, you know, where it is there is room to do more, we will definitely do that. So we know the advice and the concern, and indeed we accept that they are valid concerns. We also appreciate and accept the views in terms of, you know, what more we could focus on. As Honorable McPherson has indicated, being progressive with policy issues, protection of consumers, and the protection of the investment in the industry. So definitely, considering, yes, we are a DTIC entity, it's definitely good areas we can excel and progress with. So in our planning, it is opportune. We are at the point where we are to, well, we have started reviewing our strategic plan and annual performance plan for next year. So it is a fresh perspective, and we definitely will consider that as long as we also ensure that, you know, we are aligning with DTIC's outcomes and also our mandate. So we definitely welcome the advice. We will indeed reply, you know, with specific detail, especially on legacy issues like the criminal cases. We're also trying to be sensitive regarding people's personal information in that regard. So we will definitely come back with a written reply and provide the details. But thank you very much for the advice and guidance that you have given. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Honourable members, I'm sure we can move on to the next item. Thanking the DTIC and the board for their presentation and engagement. Can we pick up then the next set of issues, which is the minutes? They were actually circulated. Secretary, I think what we can do, let's take a set at a time. Then you can actually fly to that, and then we can be able to go through that. If you can actually just assist us to facilitate that process. Secretariat?
Chair, we are flighting the first set of minutes is dated 11th August. It's our first public hearing that we have on the remitted bills. Chair, go down. We have three members in attendance and members joined by other committees as well, Chair. If you go down, Chair. Then we captured just the all those who were in attendance, Chair, of from the stakeholder side. And then just, Chair, there with the first we have an introduction and standard procedure that we normally undertake when we start the meetings, Chair. Then we received our first submission by Professor Kajika, Chair. That submission was followed by the South African Institute for Intellectual Property Law. Professor Vito followed, Chair. And then we had the next presentation was from the joint group of academics who have submitted an input, Chair, on the bill, on both bills, as related to the reservations. We also then see from the Libraries Information Association, LIASA. Then we also have from Scholarly Horizon, represented by Mrs. Nicholson. South African Trade Democratic Teachers Union made the submission as well, Chair. This was followed by the Publishers Association of South Africa, PASA. Then that they were followed by the Dramatic Artistic and Literary Rights Organization, DALRO, who made a submission. This was followed by the Academic and Nonfiction Authors Association of South Africa, ANFASA. This was followed by Multi-Choice, made a submission followed by Netflix as well, Chair, and followed by the Personal Managers Association, the African Guild of Actors, and then I think the last submission was from the Independent Black Film Collective, and the last one, my apologies, is the Independent Producers Organization, IHO, who made submissions on the bill, on the reservations on the two bills, and the meeting adjourned at 9:25 past 7 until the 12th August.
Okay, to honourable members, I think that was the record we had in terms of our process. If I can actually get your response to the record before you of the minutes of the 11th of August. Honourable members. Honourable members.
Chair, we have Mr. Simmons, followed by Mr. Burns from Hamas, Chair.
Honourable Hammond.
Thank you, Chair. I move for the adoption of the minute as a correct reflection of what transpired on that day. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Hammond. To moving, let me get Burns Namash.
Thank you, Chair. I support the motion by Honourable Hammond to adopt the minutes.
There is a comment on the adoption of the minutes. Is there any objection? In the absence, Secretary, can we take the next set of minutes?
Okay, the next set of minutes is on the 12th. It's a continuation of the public hearings on the Copyright and Performance Protection Amendment Bill as debated to the President's reservation. We have other members of other parties attending, Chair. And go down, we started with the standard process. And our first submission we received on the day was from the African Freelancers Association. That was followed by the International Federation of Film Producers Associations. They followed the Recording Industry of South Africa. RISA followed them. We then had the input from the African Music Industry Council, followed by the Composers, Authors and Publishers Association with respect to the reservations. Then that was followed by the African Music Rights Organization. As part of the procedures, we had to if you can recall, you had to leave and elect an acting chairperson. Mrs. Simmons then an acting chairperson. We then proceeded to hear the evidence from the African Music Performance Rights Association, which was then followed by the Artist and Creative Fair Royalties and Fair Copyright as it related to the reservation chair. That was followed by Blind South Africa and the Copyright Coalition of South Africa. Professor Mobe also made a submission, Chair. Section 27 made a submission as well. It was followed by Ricky Pace made a submission. We also had the input from Health Justice Initiative with respect to the reservation. And we then also have from the African National Council for the Blind, which was followed by the Congress of South African Trade Unions and Trade Union for Musicians of South Africa with respect to the Asian Asset Based Cap and the Form Protection Amendment. Those were the stakeholders that made submissions. It was 18 stakeholders that made submissions on that day. It would be 92.
Let's actually hear from the members, if ever that's a true reflection and the record of the meeting, honorable members.
Chair, we have Ms. Mutahung, Chair.
Honorable Mutahung.
Thanks, Chair. I move for adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much. There's a mover for the adoption. Thank you, Honorable Mutahung. Honorable members, then it's the seconder.
Chair, we have Mr. Mbuyani, Chair.
Honorable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. I second for the adoption of the minutes as reflected. Thank you.
Thank you for the secondment. Let me just check if ever there's any objection from the honorable members. In the absence of any objection, can we take the next set of minutes, Secretary?
Chair, the next meeting was on the 17th of August, Chair. We basically just considered the committee program. And minutes, Chair, if you can go down. Those were the two items for consideration. Can I go down? We had an apology from Mr. McPherson and Ms. Yaku for that day, Chair. Then the normal introductory followed. Then the committee did the program, which will be amended again, and considered minutes of the 2nd and 1st and 2nd of June 2020, and a meeting adjourned at 9:31. It was a really short meeting, Chair.
Honourable members, for the set of the 17th of August, can I get your acceptance or amendments?
Chair, Mr. Namasha, Chair, raise his hand, Chair.
Honourable Namasha.
Honourable Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
There's a mover for the adoption. Can we get the seconder? Honourable members, seconder.
Chair, Ms. Mutahung, raise the hand, Chair.
Honourable Mutahung.
Thanks, Chair. I second for the adoption of the minute.
There's secondment for the adoption of the 17th of August minutes. Can I get, if ever there's any objection? In the absence, agreed to. Can we take the next set? This one is agreed to.
Okay, the next set of minutes is for the 18th of August. On that day, Chair, we received a briefing by the Department of Trade and Industry Competition on its fourth financial and non-financial performance for the 2020-21 financial year. And we also considered the first draft report on the overseas visit to Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. Chair, we can go down. Chair, Mr. Yaku, Ms. Yaku, it was only apology for that day. We have to correct that there. Chair, then we had the introductory processes of the meeting, and then we received a briefing led by Ms. Mabichi Thompson at the acting DG. On the DTRC's fourth quarter report. Then, Chair, we also had to elect an acting chair because you also required to leave. Then we elected Mr. Mbuyani to the chair, and we then proceeded to consider the first draft of the report, Chair. Then, Chair, a decision was taken that members will submit their proposed conclusions and recommendations by Thursday the 19th at 12 o'clock for inclusion in the report. The meeting adjourned at 11:55. Until Friday 20th.
Okay. Honourable members, if we can actually indicate if ever it's through reflection. The 18th of August minutes before you.
Chair, we have Ms.
Come again?
We have the hand of Mrs. Hermans, Chair.
Honourable Hermans.
Thank you, Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes as tabled.
There's a move up of the adoption.
We have
Mr. Mutahung. Honourable Mutahung.
Chair, I second the adoption of the minutes.
That is the secondment of the minutes. Let's check if there is any objection. If none, the minutes are agreed to. Can we then move to the next set, secretary? This one is agreed to.
Chair, we move to the next set, would be the 20th, Chair, of August. Chair, we proceeded with the formal consideration of the draft report on the overseas visit to Gauteng in KwaZulu-Natal. Chair, we go down. Chair, we then also we received as part of the request on our meeting for concluding remarks and conclusions from three political parties, which was from the African National Congress, the Democratic Alliance, as well as the African Christian Democratic Party, who submitted concluding remarks and recommendations for consideration, Chair. We have captured the discussion as each party submitted. As you can see, the ANC was the first which we can look at, Chair, and it's captured there, Chair. The recommendations that was tabled on behalf of the ANC and the advice we gave with regard to those, Chair, is all captured there. Then we also considered the conclusions submitted by the Democratic Alliance, Chair, that we can go down, as well as the recommendations. And we proceeded, it was on two or three specific items, there was a call for a vote on the matter, Chair, which was concluded. Then we considered the input from the African Christian Democratic Party, which the committee also deliberated on, and we concluded we have a position on those matters. Chair, what we then proposed was for a break of a couple of minutes for us to submit the conclusions and recommendations as that was agreed to in principle for consideration. That is then 26, which is forms part of the... Then submitted the report for adoption, which was adopted, Chair, and the meeting adjourned at 10:35 until Tuesday the 24th.
Okay. Thank you very much, Secretary. Let's actually hear from them if this is the true reflection of our meeting.
Chair, Mutahut, Chair.
Honorable Mutahut.
Thanks, Chair. I move for adoption of the minutes.
20th of August minutes are being moved. Let's check if ever there's any secondment.
Okay, with Mr. Drummond, raise the hand, Chair.
Honorable Hammond.
I second the adoption of the minutes. Thank you, Chair.
Let's check if ever there's any objection, honorable members. If none, can we then accept that the 20th August minutes are agreed to? I'm sure that was the last set, Secretary.
That's correct. That's the last set of minutes for today, Chair.
Okay. Can we then take the last item on the agenda in terms of the program of the committee? We did actually raise it, Secretary, that there were lots of issues, particularly the parliamentary program, but there are also issues outside the parliamentary program that will affect and impact on our program. And we might end up actually making changes. So can I ask that you then fly to our latest program and let's actually get the members just to give us more advice or guidance. Let's actually have that flighted. Then take us through, Secretariat.
Chair, the program has changed as a result of the request. Number one, from the minister to delay, asking for additional times to prepare the response to the remitted bills, Chair, as well as the changes to the parliamentary program. Chair, we also like to note members to note that the parliamentary program is fluid. We do not know yet the outcome of the Constitutional
Court application regarding local government elections. So our program may change again, hopefully not significant, but as a result of that request, you asked us to look at the redraft program, taking into consideration all those limitations, Chair. So on next Tuesday, we're looking at entities we have not seen for a while, Chair, and thought that it would be a good time for us to engage with them. We will have a briefing by the National Consumer Tribunal, as well as the National Security Regulator, on the fourth quarter financial and non-financial performance for the year 2020-21. And we'll also consider the first draft of our report, fourth quarter financial and non-financial reports of the DTIC. That will be followed by a briefing by NUMISA on the 8th of September on its fourth quarter financial and non-financial performance, as well as SANAS on its fourth quarter financial and non-financial performance. Chair, then we go down to the next, the 14th of September. We will then get a briefing by the Companies Tribunal on its fourth quarter financial performance, and we will formally consider the fourth quarter report on the financial and non-financial performance of the DTIC. Chair, on the 15th, we will receive a briefing by the DTSC and the BBBEE Commission on its equity program scheme and on the BBBEE Commission's activities over the last financial year. Chair, then on Tuesday the 21st, we'll get a briefing on the master plan for steel and metal fabrication sector, Chair. And on the 26th, we'll get a briefing on trade policy for an update on trade negotiation. It will be either one of the two, Chair. We're still engaging with the DIC, which one would be ready for engagement on. Then on the 28th of September, we'll get a briefing by the Competition Commission and the Competition Tribunal on outcomes of matters considered by the Tribunal. Then, Chair, on Friday the 1st of October, we'll get the response from the DTIC and Public Funder Marrow on the submissions received with regard to the Copyright and Performance Protection Amendment Bills. On the 5th of October, Chair, we will start with our budget review and recommendation report process, Chair. We will get the briefing by the Office of the AG on all the outcomes as it relates to the DTIC and its entities. That will be followed by the DTIC on its 2020-21 annual report, as well as on its first quarter financial and non-financial performance for the 2021-22 financial year. Chair, then we will consider, we will start deliberations on the 6th and the 8th and the 12th of October on the Copyright and Performance Protection Amendment Bills, Chair. On the 13th of October, Chair, we'll continue deliberations and we'll consider the first draft of the budget review and the recommendation report. And then on the 15th of October is the formal consideration of the budget review and the recommendation report. Those, the constituency period will start from the 15th until the 1st of November, as stated, but as I stated earlier, the parliamentary program is fluid and may change again. But this is the program that are proposing for the committee's consideration, Chair.
May we then get the committee to respond to the request to consider? Honourable members.
Mr. Hermans, raise the hand, Chair.
Honourable Hermans.
Thank you, Chair. Noting the statements by the Secretary that Parliament's program is still in a fluid state because of the court case, I wish to propose that we adopt the program as tabled. Thank you.
Honourable Benz Namashi.
Thank you very much, Chair. I second Honourable Hemmings. On a lighter note, Chair, I thought Honourable McPherson would second. Thank you.
Well, it's obviously possible to ask the other member to contribute. Are there any objections? If ever none, let's actually then proceed. The program is actually understood by the committee. Hopefully, we hope that we don't actually have lots of changes, but at this stage, it's actually unavoidable, and it's not actually at our control to a large extent. Can we then actually proceed to the last item, which is our next meeting, Secretariat?
Apologies, Chair, my mic was off. Chair, our next meeting is on the 7th of September, starting at 9 o'clock. So we have next week, we have two meetings, the 7th, 8th of September, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm sure we can actually then conclude with that. That next meeting is on the 7th, and I think we can be able to actually agree that on the basis of the agenda today, we can conclude our meeting. And if you allow me, I should be able to say our meeting should be adjourned. So it is conclusion of our meeting. Thank you very much for your participation, honorable members. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.